Hello everyone, welcome to Amen, where we have the power of God and anime on our sides. My name is Greg, today I'm joined by Nick, and we have another special guest. First one in a very long time, I think. When was the last time that we had a guest?
I think like 2-3 months ago?
Yeah, something like that, 2 or 3 months.
Oh, you haven't had a guest, period.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's just been you guys talking.
It's just been Greg and I.
It's just been us, the two of us.
Or
yeah, movies.
Yeah, we were also on break for a little bit, so
okay,
that's why.
Yeah, and if you guys can't tell by his lovely voice, we obviously have Sam back with us. Actually, yeah, we've had Sam on here once or twice.
Yes,
the pastor of our church, and we're here because we are doing the third part, and I think the last part of our pastor series, where we've been just going around asking all the pastors, soon-to-be pastors, were pastors, and in a interesting pastor-ish-ing situation right now. We've just been asking them what it's like being a pastor, how do they get to this point, and all those fun questions in. Today we have the only pastor who is currently pastoring in a very traditional sense right now. So thank you, Sam, for coming here and for speaking with us.
Yeah, thanks, Sam.
Thanks, guys, for having me. Yeah, it's good to be here.
So I guess to start out, let's just ask, how long have you been pastoring for? And also, what does a week in your life kind of look like?
How long I've been pastoring for? I think it's for, what's that website that you put your resume on?
LinkedIn.
Oh yeah.
Wow, it's been a while, huh?
it's been way too long now.
I haven't. I'm just gonna look it up because I was wondering like how long it's been, like really, and I was like, oh, I can't remember that website. How do I even navigate this thing?
Okay, I can probably look for you too.
Okay, I see it. Oh wait,
oh, you found it?
I think it's top right.
15 years and 8 months. Well, no, okay, so 6 years and 10 months as pastor. So, but 15 years and 8 months as just, you know, helping out at Livingstone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess it was 8 years and 10 months as just, you know, volunteer stuff. Lean worship, Sunday school, small group.
Dang. And this has almost been like seven years since you've been a pastor?
Almost 7 years, yeah.
Yeah, that's a long time.
Kind of crazy.
I know.
It is crazy. It is crazy to think about because it doesn't feel like it's been that long. But at the same time, when I think back, it's some stuff just feels like a different, like another lifetime ago. Like when, like if I try to think about like Greg, when you were in youth group, like that just feels like so long ago. Like I can barely.
It really does.
I can barely remember what that feels like. Yeah. You know? But so, yeah.
Yeah. I guess, what did you do before becoming a pastor? Since there were so many years where you were helping out. Yeah. What did you do beforehand?
Yeah, so I worked at Morgan Stanley, and I was for a while a client service associate, is basically assisting financial advisors, and then I became a complex manager's assistant. So the manager of that branch of financial advisors, I was their assistant. So I worked at Morgan Stanley for 4 years or 5 years.
Awesome.
Sounds kind of complicated.
I know, right?
It was complicated for me because I was not a detail oriented. Well, I'm still not really a detail oriented person. So it stretched me in a lot of ways. That was a really tough time for me.
And we've asked everybody this question so far. And I think I probably heard the answer a few times already, but obviously the people listening have never heard. But what was it specifically that made you want to be a pastor?
Well, I received my calling from the Lord while I was at a retreat 1 year, in oil. And it was during when a missionary was preaching. His name is Abjith Fernando, and he was a missionary to Sri Lanka. And he was just kind of talking about the persecution that was happening there, and how his, like, the members of his church and the people that he was ministering to, he would see their bodies float down the river, their dead bodies. And the Lord told him to stay. And at that moment, like, I was also having like a really hard time at work during that time. I was getting sick every month, and at one point, very close to the time that I went to on retreat, I was so sick that I was coughing up blood. Just because, it was just so stressed from work. It was just out so outside of my personality. And so work, I think, literally was killing me in a slow way, maybe even in a fast way. I don't know how long I would have lasted if I had kept working there. But basically, I took the manager, became the admin of the branch, and then they were downsizing. And so they laid off a bunch of other managers' assistants, and they kind of put their jobs, combined them with mine, and had me do their work. So I was managing like a few branches, I think three or four branches at the same time, and it was just absolutely killing me. Like it was just doing me in. And I remember listening, while all this is going on, I remember listening to Ajit Fernando, and I just felt the Lord speak to me at that moment, and I was like, Lord, all right, like if this is like what it means to serve you, then just then I'm like letting go of the things that I'm holding back from you, basically. Before I was like, I don't want to go overseas, I don't want to do missions, like just tell me to do anything else besides that stuff. And then I just let that stuff go. I was like, Lord, whatever you want me to do, just tell me. And at that moment, the Lord spoke to me, and he said, if you're gonna die for something, and I knew he was talking about my job, if you're gonna die something, it's better that you die for me. And that was a moment that I knew the Lord wanted me to just, with my whole life, just serve him. And so that's when I decided to enter into seminary.
Dang, that sounds pretty intense, and honestly, like.
Yeah, it was really intense because, yeah, I prayed for, just like prayed like so many times to the Lord, like just for like 2 months after that. I just like, are you sure? Like, and I like kind of like dragged my feet on that decision. I was like, oh, I don't know, Lord. Yeah, but the Lord like definitely pushed me to a decision.
I guess what did your when you knew that you wanted to be a pastor, what did your parents think about that?
By that time, they knew like everything that I was going through at work and stuff like that, and they knew how like what a huge toll it was on me. And at that point, it had an understanding, like, of because I had told them I wanted to go into ministry, full-time ministry before. And they weren't really quite on board with it, and that was when I was younger, before I started working at Morgan Stanley. And but this time, when I actually told my mom and my dad, they were pretty supportive, surprisingly. And I just thank the Lord for that, because without their support, I really don't think I would have been able to easily make that decision also. But yeah, they were very supportive, and I think my aunt told me one day. Like just out of the blue, she told me the story about my dad. And she said that my grandfather one night had a dream that, I'm not sure if she said that. I think it was like an angel came to him and said it or something. But my dad had wanted to go to seminary when he was younger. I didn't know that actually at the time. He never told me. And an angel came to my grandfather in his sleep and told him, you got to let him go. And my grandfather, you know, he was crying in his dream. He was crying. He's like, no, I can't let him go. Can't let him go. And then he woke up and he was crying. And my grandfather never let my dad go to seminary. I didn't know that. Like, I had no idea that that was even the story, you know, a story in my family, at all. But that was super interesting to me.
What your dad didn't get to do, got passed down to his son. Sounds a little bit like, I don't know, that just reminds me of David and the temple. I don't know. Very tangential way. It just sounds like David in the temple.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? But like the Lord just has an intention, right? He has his plan, but he doesn't need us, right? It's just an interesting thing, right? Mm-hmm. He can use us, but he doesn't need us. And he wants to use us, right? But if we say no, it's fine. He will use somebody else. Not to say that that he didn't use my dad, but maybe not to his full potential, you know? Not sure, you know?
Mm-hmm. Seems like a trend that I think everybody has that we've talked to has had parents that were like, at least like semi-supportive of the decision, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from what it sounds like. I mean, the last one we had was Jason, and they're like, oh, you have things lined up. You sure about this? Like, but I think for you, it was like you already knew that, like, or your parents knew what you were going through, and they're very much supportive about it. And
I don't know if they had heard from the Lord themselves, which I don't know. Maybe they prayed about it and maybe they received something from the Lord, but but they were supportive.
And good thing that they were, or else we would not be here today.
True. You know, it's what's funny, when I told Tom, and then Tom Bao, I was like, oh, Tom, like I feel like the Lord is calling me into, you know, to full-time ministry to be a pastor. And he's the only one who's ever said this to me, but it's so funny. He just very candidly said, you are going to suffer. Like, that's just all he said to me. I was like, oh, okay. Thanks, Tom. Yeah. No, but yeah. That's
good old Tom.
That's
about what I expect from Tom.
Yeah.
I think it's funny. I feel like every pastor now tells every prospective pastor, like, it's not gonna be fun as you might think it is. It's gonna be like a very hard time. It's
definitely different than what you expected it's gonna be when you know at first.
Yeah, I think that's a good segue into the next question. Yeah. I was gonna ask what is the hardest part of ministry right now, but I think I want to know a little bit about going through seminary. What was maybe like some of the hardest parts about seminary?
Seminary. Oh man, I was dirt poor. You know, I didn't have time. So you have to do a lot of reading, you have to do a lot of studying. Well, I mean, if you're good at school, or if you've done the classes before, because I had classmates who had gone through like Bible college and stuff, and they've done the classes before, or similar classes, right? And they had the same professors for undergrad as they had in grad school. So the content was like almost identical for them. And they like flew through the program. But for me, like, it just took so much time for me to read, to study, to process everything that I was learning and going through, that I just didn't have a lot of time to do a lot of other things. Of course, I was also serving on the weekends, And so that was really hard. I was dating at one point, and so I wasn't really able to give my dating relationship very much time, or the time that it may have deserved. So that was a real struggle. And like, I was just super dirt poor. So I was eating like very badly. I gained a lot of weight. I was just eating McDonald's, like, you know, just like stop at McDonald's for like 5 minutes and then go back to the library, you know, that kind of thing. Cause it's fast and it's cheap. So, yeah, that wasn't that difficult. I think that probably the biggest difficulty for me emotionally, though, was to be away from church at the time, because I wanted to invest in everybody at church. Like, I wanted to, that's what I was, you know, in school for. But like, at the same time, I had to be in school. So it was like this double-edged sword that I was like working really hard, but not at the, you know, it's useful, right? And definitely invaluable for me now. But at the time, it was just taking me away from something that I felt like I really enjoyed so much, was to be with everybody at church. Yeah, and I do feel like I missed out on a huge portion of, you know, people's lives during seminary, that I can never get back. And I don't know, I do feel sad about that. But at the same time, I know that the Lord called me to learn and called me to be prepared for the pulpit. So, you know, it's what I had to do. And I feel like even though it was, in a way, a sacrifice, I don't know. But, you know, like, that this is what I was supposed to do. And I think, like, during when I studied, I always had a picture of everybody on my desktop, and just thought of everybody as I was, you know, alone in the library often. And it was pretty lonely, actually, in some ways, just because it was just me and the Lord for that. But I do think that the Lord worked on me a lot during seminary, just like hammered away at my character, while I spent a lot of alone time, just studying and spending time with him, stuff. Yeah.
I guess to backtrack, what school did you go to and why did you choose that school?
Alliance Theological Seminary. Well, our church has kind of like an affiliation with the Alliance. I think Elder Wu has taken several classes there. Pastor June graduated from Alliance, and it's close by. It's a good school. It has a good mix of practical ministry, and also academia. So it's a blend. It's a kind of a more well-rounded blend. Also, it has, which I didn't know at the time, so it's not why I chose it, but I found out that it had a great, also a good emphasis on spiritual disciplines spiritual health and growth, which I don't think a lot of seminaries really teach, but Alliance really focuses on cultivating, you know, like a spiritual life. I think a lot of seminaries forget that, you know, just because somebody knows the Bible, somebody, you know, can study the Bible, they not necessarily having a relationship with the Lord. And I do think, you know, you can get lost in it pretty easily. So I think I do really appreciate my seminary for just being kind of, I think, a holistic learning experience, a well-rounded learning experience.
It's pretty interesting because I think that spiritual disciplines as a whole is something that, yeah, a lot of Christians are probably lacking in, if I had to say, because it's like it's a thing that I think nobody talks about as much, right? Like, if you go ask somebody like, hey, what should I do to make my like to help my spiritual life, they'll be like, oh, you can go read the Bible more, you can pray more, you can I don't know, like go to church more. And like obviously some of those are part of spiritual disciplines, but like I feel like I rarely hear people be like, oh yeah, you should like be meditating, spending time with God,
fasting,
fasting
silence.
No one ever talks about fasting.
Oh yeah,
that's the one thing nobody ever wants to talk about.
Yeah, because they don't want to do it.
I mean even me, I haven't fasted in a really long time, and I do miss it. Like I feel like we should. I think the last time was when me and Jason, I don't know if Jason might, maybe not, but me and Young and Joe, I think we did a silent retreat and we fasted and we went to the monastery. I don't even know if the monastery is still, I think it was closed for COVID. And it was just, it's just super, I don't know, super cathartic, very cleansing time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just find that super interesting because it is something that people don't tend to talk about that much. And it's good that you guys had it as like a part of your seminary experience. I think that it definitely makes for more well-rounded people, Christians in general.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think so. Yeah. I think it's difficult. It's easy to know things, but it's difficult to change character, and I think mm-hmm. that's what God is in the profession of doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what's the greatest discipline that you grew in through seminary?
I think solitude.
Solitude.
Yes, being alone with the Lord, and being content. I think in that solitude. Learning to be content with the Lord, I think. That's something that's very difficult, I think. Because, I don't know, we just always are looking for relationships. We're always looking to marriage. We're always looking, to be with people, to be involved in community. And then we never really think about solitude. But I do think solitude is very formative in spiritual development. I think that if you look at the lives of many great leaders, that the Lord puts them into solitude before he prepares them to lead. So I think George Mueller, he got very, very sick, like I think right before he got his call, and the Lord and I think it was his doctor who suggested that he go into the countryside, but basically he just spent like an extended period of time away from people, and the Lord really worked on him during that time, worked on his character, just him and God alone. Yeah, I can't think of any other examples right now, but I think there are other examples.
Like Jesus being in the desert.
Jesus.
But that's a little different. That's a little different, kind of.
Yeah. No, I mean, Paul also, right?
David?
Yeah, David in the wilderness. Moses in the wilderness. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of people in the Bible, I think.
Yeah. So it's a biblical theme as well as, I think, an experiential theme for, modern day Christian leaders also.
Yeah.
Who was the guy you were talking about? George
Mueller?
George Mueller? George Mueller? He is, he was an evangelist in England. I think he was originally German, but he's famous for having a lot of orphanages and being also at the very same time very poor. But how he funded his orphanages was that he prayed. And there's some ridiculous stories where like he couldn't even put bread on the table, but he would pray, and then 5 minutes later there would be a knock on the door and someone would bring bread. But I think over his lifetime he generated millions and millions of dollars, not because he told people he needed money, but because he prayed, and people just at the right time you know, came and said, I feel the Lord tugging on my heart to just give to what you're doing, or to this orphanage, and by the grace of God, his organization, I think, is even still around today. And he was, I don't know, he was alive in like the 1800s or something like that. So his foundation is still, I think, yep, georgemueller.org is still going. So that's, to me, is a crazy story. Yeah, just the testament of God's working.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's awesome to hear. Solitude.
Yeah, it's all a being content. It's mm-hmm. it's very, I think solitude is, yeah, like you said, very hard for us in this day and age to, I think, even be able to understand, because I feel like these days solitude is seen in like a lot of senses as like a very negative thing, because solitude is generally associated with like loneliness, and loneliness is associated with like, I don't know, having no friends and with depression and all that kind of stuff. And so like people have a problem with not being alone. And like, if you look at like the areas where people tend to spend the most time on, like their phone and their computers, all of it is like, or a large portion of it is connected like with other people. It's like you're on Facebook, maybe not Facebook that much anymore, but like Instagram, you're on, like younger kids are on like TikTok and all that kind of stuff. And all of that is just interacting with other people all the time. It's like, it's never been easier to interact with other people.
It's social media, right? Like,
yeah, social media.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's in some way relational, communal. Yeah.
Yeah. And I agree. Yeah. And people just have a really hard time being alone these days, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a difference between like, there's a big difference between like practicing solitude, like, and being just alone. I think that there's like a big difference between the two. The way that I think of it is like, solitude is something that you kind of like put yourself in for a purpose. Like, I think the solitude has a purpose to it. It's not like I have found myself in a state where I am just alone, in a sense. It's I'm going to be alone. I'm going to remove myself purposely from community in some sort of way in order to draw closer to God. Like, I don't know, sometimes it's just good to not spend time with people. Sometimes you just need that time by yourself. But because like, yeah, this culture is so interconnected at this point, it's so hard for people to even like want to do that. I think people are so afraid of being alone now that they would never choose to seek out solitude if they were given the chance.
Yeah. It's interesting that, you know, even the way that we look at singlehood, right, is almost like a curse, right? That you have to be like called to singlehood. Biblically, like, you know, Paul says it's a gift. But, you know, and then we look at it, we're like, oh, God has to call you to singlehood, like really call you. And I do think that we look at it much more as a curse than anything. Like, I think a lot of the reason is the world that we live in, is this kind of like worship or obsession of community. And I do think that when you're in solitude, you're not alone. You're realizing that when you are alone, you're not alone, that you are with God. God is with you. And it's that realization, increasing realization, the increasing awareness of his presence that you're growing in while you're spending time apart from, I think, the tangible relationships that you have in your life, or the more present relationships that you have in your life.
And this doesn't have anything to do with what we're talking about, but it is like, it has to do with the idea of solitude. I just wanted to just want to make a little mention of this, because this reminds me of a manga I read, which I mean, obviously, so many things in life, dude. Gotta connect it to, you know, anime in some way, right? There's a manga called Koko no Hito, Koko, K-O-K-O-U, and this is a story about essentially rock climbing or like mountain climbing or mountaineering, whatever you want to call it. And it's really interesting because I think most stories these days are about coming together, right? The power of friendship, right? We want to all
knock on the power.
Like, we want to all be friends at the end. Like, yeah, we want to like and like want to find love and all that kind of stuff. And this series stands in stark contrast to a lot of those things because it's about this man who's, well, he's a little bit different. He's like unable to really be in society that well, and so what does he do? He goes off and he like mountaineers by himself. Has a really nice imagery, very nice art. It's a little more mature than your average thing. I'd say if you're younger than 18, I don't know, maybe don't check this one out. You need to be a little bit older to understand it. But yeah, if you want to understand or you want to see something that talks about the idea of solitude and the idea that being together or being within community all the time might not be always necessarily the best, go check this one out. I'll admit I don't particularly like it, but I will say that it's pretty good. Now that we're done with that, Sam, so you've been a pastor here at our church for basically 7 years now. I see this in the beginning. We never got around to talking about it, but yeah, what is it that you do on a weekly basis? Like, because I know you got to, I know on Sundays you got to preach, right? But then outside of that, what are you doing like for the rest of the week?
Yeah, well, surprisingly, most of it is preparing to preach. Prayer is a huge portion of how you prepare to preach. So I do spend the first part of my week is mostly just reading the passage, not really kind of processing anything, but really just reading it over, reading it through, keep reading it, and then praying, kind of like, okay, like, Lord, what is it that you want to teach us? And then I spend a significant time looking through different commentaries. And different commentaries are, you know, depending on the chapter and depending on the passage, of different lengths. So some commentaries may not have a lot to say about certain passages, and some commentaries have so much to say about, you know, each word, the meaning and things like that. So I'll kind of go through different commentaries. And then I'll also look up in like a Christian dictionary, like any topics that come up regarding the passage. Like if it's like salvation or something like that, like I'll just, you know, type it in and look up the passage and see all the instances in the Bible in which salvation pops up. That theme pops up. That's kind of like a biblical theological overview of the theme. But what I really want to get to is what that specific passage is saying about that theme. Like what are the nuances that passage is bringing to light for those people at that time? That's really what I'm trying to understand, I think. And so a lot of my week is spent in preparation. And then, you know, other than that, I will have kind of meetups with people, lunches with people. And of course, my nights are taken up by, you know, church activities and stuff. That's pretty much it. I am also part of the building committee, part of the governing board. So there's different committees that I'm part of too, that I will help out with certain things, but those are really mostly one-offs. Don't take up a lot of my time, but you know, can be time consuming if I have too much on my plate. But yeah, I teach a small group. Well, I new ways teaching it now. So, but 6th and 7th grade boys. So when I am doing it, I do spend some time preparing for that also. But yeah, I am a lot less busy nowadays than I used to be. So yeah.
How many hours would you say you work, like, weekly?
Oh, I don't know. I can't even put a number. I don't. Yeah, I can't even guess. Yeah, I don't even know. Because I don't really consider it all work, you know. Like,
yeah,
some of it's life, you know, just spending time with people, sitting down with people, and you know, going to small groups and teaching small groups and stuff like that. That's nothing that I wouldn't do if I wasn't a pastor. You know, so I don't really know. I don't really know where to draw the line between work and life. It's not really work.
Yeah.
That's just my answer.
No, yeah. So I was kind of expecting that because yeah. I know, like, yeah, me and Greg do a lot of the same things. We go to, like, church, we go to Sunday school, we go to, like, different things. We help serve.
Yeah.
But, like, I feel like...
Like, if I worked another job, I would do all that stuff, too. It's
Yeah. So I guess, like, how long does it take for a sermon to be, like, put together?
Oh, sermon? A sermon, it depends. It depends on what passage, and it depends on my familiarity with the passage, and... The biggest thing that it depends on is how the Lord is speaking to me. Sometimes I can write a sermon in like a day or in like a couple hours even. Like that's happened before, but it's absolutely miraculous. It's only happened like maybe once or twice. Most of the times though, I just spend a lot of time marinating and a lot of stuff. So in the beginning it took a lot longer. It did take me around like 40 hours to prepare a sermon. Now it's taking me I think about 25, maybe, yeah, 25-ish. So it's not as intense as it used to be.
Okay.
And what's the hardest part about being a pastor right now? What do you think is like the most challenging aspect of it? And also, like, what is a part that you think that you need to still grow in more, still need to do better or to a greater degree?
Let me answer the second thing first, because I think that one's probably super fresh on my mind. But patience is probably the biggest thing that I need to grow in. And a lot of people will be like, oh, you're so patient. You know, like, you're like, you never get angry or upset, but like I do. And I do think that that's one thing that the Lord is hammering me on in this season also. What was the first question about?
Hardest thing about
hardest thing
pastoring, about being a pastor.
I think not worrying, but I think it's like it's a byproduct of pride. In a sense that you think that it's your impact that has, you know, is the catalyst to change or something like that. It's that temptation, right? Like that, oh, it's like, what am I doing wrong? Or like, what can I do to fix a problem? I think that's the hardest thing is to watch a congregation and to watch, you know, things happen in a congregation. You know, everybody's always changing, everybody's always moving, everybody's always has an idea, everybody always, and to when things don't go the way that I expect them to go, not to trust the Lord and to really be like, Lord, what are you doing? Like, you can't do it this way, like, or this person is, you know, I don't know. This person is like messing everything up in a sense, right? Like, it's just not going the way that I expect it to. So I tend to have like very an anxious mind, I guess, when it comes to that. And then, you know, you think to yourself, well, you know, it's not all in your hands, right? The Lord has to do certain things. And then, but it's like, okay, what am I supposed to do? Should I step in? Should I say something? Should I, you know, like I, you know, after I've said something, how many times should I say something? And then when should I put my foot down? You know, all of these questions about what you should do in certain situations. And I think that it just comes down to, you know, ask the Lord. Ask the Lord if you're unsure, and it's, I have a hard time, you know, I have a hard time just watching certain things go down and trying to instead hear from the Lord. I'm anxious about certain circumstances. It's kind of like my sermon on Acts 23, where, you know, Paul is just going from trial to trial, and he's like just whiffing every single one of them, right? And, you know, the Lord knows that and Paul, in a sense, I think also knows that he's headed towards Rome. And that's where he needs to be to testify about Jesus, but it doesn't come with many worldly successes. And ultimately, you know, it comes with his death. But to me, that's just so difficult for me to stomach and to swallow. I think seemingly, I think worldly failures in that way, even though I know that the Lord is still in charge, even though I know the Lord is still faithful to us, it's hard. It's hard, I think, to be sure of it in the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that, I mean, that's, I think, something that so many people have to deal with. I think it's hard for everybody.
It's not specific to pastoring.
And I think I don't know what word I'm supposed to use. I want to say as a counter, but it's not literally like a counter. But from the other side, what do you think is the most blessing part about being a pastor? Like, what part do you enjoy the most, you think, is the most blessing?
Pastoring is amazing. Like, it's, I don't know. It's just so good. Like, I think one of the questions that you guys were going to ask, like, what did you have to give up to go to like be a pastor or whatever? Like, you know, like I was trying to think about that question, and I'm like, you know, I actually got more pastoring than I ever did in the world. Like, which to me, I never thought would happen. But honestly, worldly wise, I've never experienced a need that the Lord didn't want to fulfill. And everything has just been a blessing. So I don't know, like, okay, I could go through, you know, like, my finances, right? Like, at Morgan Stanley, I was making 40,000. I make 60,000 now. Like, if that's not a huge difference, like, for the positive, like, I didn't know I was gonna make that much. I never negotiated my salary. I never, you know, never did anything, you know, just, I was just like, Lord, just provide everything that, you know, you need me to have. And that was it. You know, I own a house. I never expected to own a house. You know, I'm married. I'd been single for so long, and, you know, was in an unsuccessful relationship. And so, you know, just, that's just been a huge blessing. You know, along with like not having a lot of time to pursue relationships, previously, I think when I started dating Joanne in the beginning, like, the Lord just freed me up a lot of time that I could spend with her, dating, you know, Jason came on board, like, to help with more things. And it just, everything just opened up for me, in terms of just the possibility of just being a little bit more free. So I don't know. I just feel like the Lord has had everything in place the way that he has intended it. And I don't know. I can't pick one single thing. It's just, everything has been a blessing. You know, just pastoring itself is very fulfilling. You know, though you do go through a lot of, you know, painstaking times and prayerful and stressful, anxious times. Also on the flip side, right, like that, you pray for people and you see change. You pray for people and you see growth. And that is, I don't know, that's just crazy to see, to be a part of that. I don't know, it's indescribable, I think.
What a wholesome answer.
Yeah, that's very wholesome. Very much blessings everywhere.
Yeah, I think that, like, you know, on the outside looking in, you wouldn't think so. But also, I think, like, you know, those are not the reasons why, you know, we discourage people from ministry. Because I believe that, you know, people should go into ministry. But I think the discouragement that I give people to go into ministry is because of calling, really. Like, because so many people have gone into ministry without calling and just gotten rocked with, I think, unmet expectations and things like that. Like, I mean, serving at a Chinese church is not always easy, right? There's a lot of sacrifices in terms of, you know, sometimes you just got to stomach stuff. Sometimes you just got to do stuff. You don't like doing it, it's fine. I mean, you just got to do it. And they, what Chinese churches look at is not, you know, just, I mean, at first, right, they'll hire you based on your degree, based on your education, right? But when you're in the church, when you're working, you know, they have no respect for that because they all have PhDs. You know, Greg, you have your master's degree. Like, you know, who cares about a higher education degree? Like, when you're in the position, what they look at is your blood, sweat, and tears. Like, are you dedicated to the job? And if you are not, then you don't get respect. Like, you know, you just, your words don't mean much. I think to be in the position, you must have a calling. But once you embrace a calling, when you know the Lord has a calling for you, you have no idea how much of a blessing life is as a pastor. It's amazing. It's crazy. I could just think of how many times your mom has cooked for, you know, our family. It's just like on weeks where I'm like so busy and I'm like having a hard time, you know, getting food on the table myself because I'm the one that cooks. And it's just like such a relief, right? When, you know, you drop food at my doorstep unexpectedly. I'm like, oh my gosh. And I even miss your text, you know?
All the time.
So, yeah. Dude,
Greg, you're the best. You and your mom.
I never get Greg's texts for some reason. I don't know. I always So, you know, there's just, you can't count the blessings. There's just so many. It's crazy. It's the best job in the world. You know, a doctor will save your life, but, you know, we are in the business of eternal life. You know, that's what the Lord, you know, walking with the Lord and doing his will on the earth is if you're, you know, you're going to spend all of your time doing that, that, you know, there's no regrets about that. I think it's just, I don't know. That's good. It's really good.
Good news.
Yeah. So, yeah. You know, don't be, I would say, don't be over optimistic if you don't have a calling to go into ministry. But if you have a call, you know, don't be afraid, you know, to embrace it. You know?
Yeah.
Do you have any other questions, Nick?
I feel like this is a good place. I had like one more, but I feel like this is a good place to like end. Yeah.
I think this is a very uplifting note.
This is a great place. Yeah.
And obviously before we end it, right? We always have to give the guest speaker some time for some last words. It's been so long since I've had to ask for this.
We did that. Yeah.
Now, Sam, is there any last words you have for the people listening?
Last words? I guess reflecting on my journey, and just seeing, you know, other people in their full-time ministry and things like that, and the joy that it brings, to them. Yeah. Just to definitely, if you're having a really rough time with your calling, you know, continue to ask the Lord and press in. And start to ask him, you know, what are the things in your heart that you're still holding on to that you still can't let go of? And let him address those things and embrace the calling that he has for you, because he has a way, way better plan than you have for yourself.
Mm. Amen. And with that, yeah, I think we will close it there. Thank you, Sam, for being here.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
For sharing.
Thanks for having me. Yeah.
Yeah, for sharing all about what it's like being a pastor right now. And thank you everybody for listening. We are Amen with the power of God and anime on our sides. We hope to see you next time. Peace.
Amen.
Amen.